Virtus is a Latin word for manliness, but it also implies excellence and courage. Welcome to Virtus, a show dedicated to inspiring and cultivating virtue, character, courage, excellence, manliness, and honor. I am your host, Bo Hutchess. All right, welcome back to another edition of Virtus. We are back in the saddle, and we're going to talk about the household. Today on the show, I'm going to read a blog post that I wrote back in January of this year entitled Navigating the Chaos by Building Up the Household. We have chaos all around us, and I think one thing that can bring order to our life, witness to our lives as believers, and structure and stability is this idea of building up households, individual households, and networking with other households. So I'm going to go ahead and read this blog post, and then I'm going to just offer some reflections as I think through, you know, some of the things I wrote, and looking to the future, thinking through some of the things in the future. You can find this blog over at my website, bohutchess.com, and you can find it under content, and it should be there for you to read for your reading pleasure. But let's go ahead and jump in. I'll get straight to the point. We need to rely on each other and our households to navigate the chaos of the world. What if 2020 is not in the rearview mirror behind us, but rather a foretaste of what is to come? What if 50 years down the road we aren't talking about 2020, but instead the 2020s? What are you going to do if the government continues its encroachment into everyday life? What are you going to do if and when supply lines get backed up again? What is your plan for when the world falls apart? All this talk probably sounds pretty doomsday-ish, but given the year we just went through, nothing is off the table. This is why we desperately need a recovery of the household and strong bonds between like-minded households. We need to get our households in order, and we need to talk to, organize, strategize, and live life with other households. Human beings are fragile when they are isolated and alone, and the powers that be want it that way. The state wants the ability to move and to shape the world to its whim, and it needs a society of isolated individuals that have no bonds or structure. Think how moldable and squishy a beanbag is compared to a slab of granite. Even individual families can be fragile when they are on their own little islands with no interest in being in community with other families. As individuals need other individuals, so households need other households. By focusing on the networking and interdependency of households, we are really getting back to the basics as the household is the core institution of any society. What is a church but a collection of households that belong to the larger household of God? Ephesians 2:19. What is a nation or a kingdom but a large household of households? This is why many Christian thinkers have regarded the fifth commandment, honoring father and mother, also applying to civil authorities. One of the problems in our politics today is that we are all wrapped up in what happens at the national level. We care far more about who the next president is than we do about the next city council member or county commissioner. The tendency to look out to the biggest thing also affects how we operate day to day. We choose Amazon over the shop on Main Street and Home Depot over the local hardware store. We've essentially traded focusing on people and businesses that can't possibly know or care about us because of their size for people and businesses that can know and care about us because of their size. I was recently guilty of this, so this is fresh in my mind. I bought a birthday gift for my wife the other day from Amazon. Later that day, I saw almost the exact same gift from a local business advertised on Instagram, ran by a wife and a mother. This is a woman who has poured her passion, time, and energy into this business to contribute to her household. Yet I, a person who shops at the same local grocery stores, eats at the same restaurants, and probably knows a lot of the same people, shipped my dollars to a nameless, faceless corporation instead of directly into her household. We have almost lost a sense of place, localism, and rootedness. As I've thought how I could benefit from other households as well as be a benefit to other households, many practical things have come to mind. For example, households can partner together by going in on a quarter, half, or whole beef cow with one or two other families, working on weekend projects together, helping each other out with childcare, feasting, fellowshipping, and celebrating with each other regularly, starting a side hustle or business together for additional income, flipping houses, lawn care during the summer, refurbishing old furniture, starting a garden or greenhouse together, putting some cash aside each month for the sole purpose of helping families in need, trying to spend your money on local family businesses for a product, good, or service, working on and encouraging practical skills like sewing, carpentry, vehicle maintenance, cooking, canning, home repairs, splitting the cost of seasonal tools or equipment such as a tractor, lawnmower, rototiller, or cement mixer with another family. These are all things that my household is currently doing or aspire to do someday in the near future. Now, I'm not advocating that we collectively raise our children or have no private property and ownership, but what I am saying is that we should learn to network and develop strong bonds between households for the mutual benefit of each family. Better to begin working on this now and strive to invest in resources beyond your own house before things really hit the fan. For further reading on subject of the household, I highly recommend C.R. Wiley's two books, Man of the House and Household and the War for the Cosmos. So that is the end of my little blog post there. If you want to go ahead and read that, like I said, it's over at my website, bohudges.com, under content. You should be able to find that. But that's the idea, right? Generally speaking, we prize the national or the global over the local. I mean, just think about how many big box stores we have in our cities and our towns and how we are so dependent upon those big corporations. It's almost hard to imagine existing without things like Walmart, Home Depot, Ace Hardware, and clothing stores, Maurice's or JCPenney or whatever the case is. I mean, these are globalistic corporations, and they are definitely not local local businesses at all. And so that's just kind of the state of things. We generally prize the national and global over the local. Something else that we see and is in the culture that we swim in, as it were, we have encroaching leftism, socialism. We have things like identity politics, cultural Marxism, the ever popular cancel culture. We also have things like the immediacy of social media and connectivity, things that affect us today, like the welfare state. The reality that families are having less kids to support the welfare state, national debt, which is in the trillions of dollars, and political division. You see, we are in a pretty fragile state as Americans. Although we think that we are very comfortable, although we think that we are very strong, we are actually in a very, very fragile state, considering some of the different cultural movements going on, considering the fact of our finances. The fact that the U.S. dollar is continuing to drop in value. I mean, we are in a very, very fragile state. And it's really, to be honest, kind of scary to think about what the next year holds, next 5, 10, 20 years hold. The fact of the matter is empires do rise and empires do fall. We are not unique. Our station in America right now is not a unique station necessarily. Empires rise and empires fall. But the thing about the falling of empires, generally speaking, they are not explosions when they blow up. They're generally implosions. They fold in on themselves. And I can kind of see that happening right now with America. America may not end next year or 5 years from now, but we have been on a downward decline for quite a while, for at least the last 50 years. We are imploding. And we are much like the Roman Empire when you look at, you know, its power, when you look at its structure, when you look at its national, when you look at its debt and the power of their currency was dropping continuously. We are very much like the Roman Empire. And the Roman Empire was around for a long time, but with each successive year, it went down further and further and further until someone took it over. And I see really America really is on our last stages. I mean, we think about we are $27 trillion in debt, probably more at this point. We are all confused in our sexuality. We don't know the difference between a man and a woman. In fact, we are discipling young children to question their gender, to be suspicious of their own gender. We live in a society of decadence where everything is at our fingertips, and we live in a complex society. And we look back through the pages of history, complex societies are very, very fragile. Just think about the supply chain. And how everyone freaked out about toilet paper last week. How could that happen? How could there be a shortage of toilet paper in 2020 in one of the greatest nations that has ever existed on planet Earth? Well, the fact is it's complex. It's a very fragile system. So the question is that I wrestle with myself and that you should be wrestling, what's your plan for the end of the world? you know, what's your plan for when things really hit the fan, whether through explosion and things go crazy or through a slow, progressively downward implosion? What is your plan for the end of the world? You know, I got to give it to preppers, right? Doomsday preppers. We kind of look at them a little suspiciously. We kind of laugh at them. But in some sense, you know, they have a lot of conventional, practical wisdom. And we, in a sense, as believers in 21st century America, we need to be preppers as well. Not necessarily having a bunker, not necessarily having, you know, 2 years worth of, you know, freeze-dried meals necessarily. But it's a good idea to be prepared for when things get worse. You know, whether that is through tangible things like, you know, having a stocked pantry, or whether that is through what I'm advocating is relying on and building strong networks and bonds between other households. It's a good idea to be prepped now so that when things get crazy, we can be ready for those things. So what's my plan? What's my solution? Well, as I said, I'm trying to build up my own household, and I'm trying to network with other households, get to know other households, my neighbors around me, but those who I go to church with as well. I'm trying to build community to rely on each other. We need strong households, and we need deeply rooted communities. And what is a household? Well, in the Bible, a household could be anything from one man, a woman, and a child to, you know, one man, a woman, lots of children, servants, all sorts of things. But a healthy household essentially means that you're walking with the Lord. Now, that everybody in the household, man, woman, children, we are walking with the Lord. We are continually seeking His face. We are having our homes in a heavenward direction. We have our homes oriented in a vertical direction. We are all walking with the Lord. In this household, everyone is also productive and disciplined over being lazy and slothful. We are working with our hands. We are striving not to be a burden to others, but instead to be a blessing, not to consume resources, but hopefully to produce things to be a blessing to others. And this is something I think was obvious and practiced by our ancestors and previous generations. And sometimes we take these things for granted. We take the fact that everything is at our fingertips for granted. It wasn't always like that. We take, you know, like I said, the supply chain for granted, that we're always going to have groceries in the stores. We're always going to have the things that we have now in the future. And that's not necessarily the case. You know, one of the guys who I listen to about just cultural commentary and whatnot, he advocates that Christians really need to think about becoming almost the neo-Amish. Right. When you think about the Amish, there's many admirable qualities to their life that Christians really can adopt and think about. You know, if you think about it, the Amish have their own economy. They kind of have their own morality, and they really have their own culture. And because of these things, they're free to do their own thing. Right, they're not necessarily concerned with who the president is, whether Republican or Democrat. They're not necessarily concerned with supply chains and things like that, because they can almost rely on each other instead of relying on the outside world. You know, that kind of famous quip: insurance for Amish is simply just more Amish people, and they're a distinct people. They don't worry about the outside world. They're not influenced by the culture nearly as much as we Christians are today. So they kind of have this tribalistic mentality, this clan mentality. You know, they have their own distinct history. They have their own distinct direction where they're going as a people, their own distinct morality, and this leads to their own distinct culture. And we kind of need that as believers. And we think about tribes and clans. These really were the atomic structures that I'm talking about, you know, comparing a beanbag chair that is moldable and malleable to a slab of granite. They rely on each other. I mean, here in the valley, the Amish, one guy does concrete, one guy does framework, one guy, you know, cuts the beams, one guy does metalwork, one guy does earthwork. I mean, they can really build houses, build structures all in-house. They don't have to go and hire somebody else. They can just rely on each other for those things. You know, and that's the beauty of the Amish. They're not influenced by outside things. They don't necessarily care about, you know, relying on politicians to save them. And the fact of the matter is, the GOP, the National Republican Party, has largely failed its voter base. I mean, this is demonstrable. I mean, where has the Republican Party been on things like cancel culture, on things like abortion, on things like LGBT? I mean, where were all the Republicans when that guy up in Denver with a bakery, Jack Phillips, was being accosted and is still being attacked for not wanting to bake a cake for a gay wedding. Where were the Republican part? Where was the Republican leaders for that? They were essentially silent. So we can't really rely on our leaders anymore. We have to take things into our own hands and rediscover this idea of prizing the local over the national. So that's my plan, you know, building up households and networks. So what have I done so far in 2021 to fulfill this? Well, a couple things. I am a church member. I am in a small group and leading a small group. And this summer, I'm leading a group of men through one of the books I mentioned, C.R. Wiley's Man of the House. I'm reading that with a couple of men this summer. And hopefully with the idea, you know, of being involved in community, church member, small group, and gathering with men, I'm building strong bonds with other households. And I don't think this is something we should necessarily play down. When the world is isolated and was isolated in 2020, you know, the church is a place where people can go to find community. We should be able to find like-minded believers within our church. So I don't think that's a small thing. It's not a small thing, especially as our culture continues to get secularized. You know, finding that community and being involved in a worshiping community is going to be very, very important in the future. So I'm involved in various spheres of community in my life. This year we've bought a beef and a pork with two other families, and that's been really beneficial for just, you know, being prepped and not having to rely on the stores and things like that. But also getting to know the processor, getting to know the butcher and the processor. That's been a great experience as well. Right now I'm doing some part-time construction work with a family here, so I'm adding skills to my life, but I'm also helping out this other business, this small business. This year, my wife and I helped a family, a very close family and friends of ours, remodel a house. And we also tagged and vaccinated some calves with another household. You know, so it's building skills. It's building networks. It's relying on each other to succeed in life, to get through this life together. Right now, my wife and I are in the process of trying to buy this house. We want to make this place productive. You know, we want to have things like a greenhouse, and we want to use this property to bless those around us. Material items, whether that's, you know, from the skills that I've procured or that my wife has procured, but also things like opening our home for fellowship and hospitality. At the moment, I do have a couple side hustles in the work. Like I said, one of them is construction. Another one is small kind of furniture building. My wife is in the process of trying to think of things that she can, you know, have as a side hustle. And we're brainstorming things that we can work on together. And the purpose of that, you know, is obviously to bring more income into the home, to have more money in the house. But it's also pursuing anti-fragility, right? It's pursuing this idea of having multiple streams of income or potential multiple streams of income if things go sideways, if both of us lose our jobs or whatever the case is. You know, I guess one of the things that I can summarize what I'm trying to get at is we need to fight, laugh, and feast together as believers. That fight, laugh, feast mantra is a mantra from a couple of guys up in Moscow, Idaho, who started this podcast, who are trying to have this network of Christian content. But their motto is just that. They want to fight, they want to laugh, and they want to feast all to the glory of God with the joy of the Lord leading the way. And I think that we need to have the same mentality. We need to fight, but we can't fight as individuals, right? We need to fight, but we need an army behind us. We need comrades. We need to laugh and celebrate victories together, and we need to feast and celebrate together. So I just want you to think about 2020 in your life. You know, what are some of the changes that you could make to your life in light of 2020? As I said, we made it through a very, very fragile time. But what can you do now in 2020, especially in this idea of building community, building up your household, building up other households? What do you need to do? What do you need to change? And I would just encourage you to just do it, to just simply do it. You know the things in your life you need to change. You know the things in your life that you need to get better at in your own personal life, in your life as a family. And I would just encourage you, just do it. I mean, that's a simple way forward. Action is always better than passivity. So just do it. That's my thoughts, and hopefully they're beneficial to you. Thanks, and we'll check you out next time. Thanks for listening. Remember that pursuing virtues is a journey, and it's a road that we are always walking. With new information, it's now time to act. So be wise and take responsibility. Be courageous and do what you need to do today.